Greetings, this is Debbie, back with part two of the Decatur Herald and Review on Wednesday, February 2nd, 2016, beginning as we usually do with the death notices. Starting in Decatur, Doswell Phyllis M. Phyllis M. Doswell, 80, of Decatur, passed away on Monday, February 1st, 2016, in Decatur. A memorial service will be held Friday, February 5th, at 1 p.m. at the Britlinger Earl Funeral Home in Decatur, with visitation from 11 to 1. Memorials may be made to the Unity Church of Decatur or Decatur Public Library. Decatur Fawns Herald. Harold Fawn, 75, at Decatur, passed away on Monday, February 1, 2016, in Fairhaven's Christian Home. Services to celebrate Harold's life will be 11 a.m. Friday, February 5, 2016, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home on Oakland in Decatur. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to services. Burial will be in the Mount Gilead Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the Alzheimer's Association. Decatur, Houghton, Glenda Lynn. Glenda Lynn Houghton, 70, of Westfield, Indiana, formerly of Decatur, passed away on Friday, January 29th, in her home. Funeral service to celebrate Glenda's life will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, February 4th, in Moran Gable Funeral Home. Visitation will be 10 to 11 Thursday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Point Pleasant Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the American Cancer Society. Forsyth Hardy, R. Eileen. R. Eileen Hardy, 87, of Forsyth, died at 1:45 Sunday, January 31, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital with her family by her side. Funeral service celebrating her life will be 11 a.m. Friday, February 5th, at Forsyth United Methodist Church. Visitation will be 1 hour before service time at the church. Burial will be in Moroa Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the St. John's Hospital Neonatal Intensive Care Unit in Springfield or Forsyth United Methodist Church in Forsyth. Tanzius Logan Funeral Services and Care is in charge of the arrangements. Decatur, Harvick Frederica B. Frederica B. Harvick, 89, of Southern Pines, passed away on February 1, 2016, in St. Joseph of the Pines. Her wish was to have no services. Bowles Funeral Home and Crematory, Southern Pines, will be assisting the family. Decatur, Holt Louise M. Louise M. Holt, 87, of Decatur, Illinois, went into the arms of her Lord and Savior on Monday, February 1st, in Bowden Creek Living Center, Decatur, Illinois. Funeral service will be 11 a.m. Thursday, February 4th, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home, with visitation 1 hour prior to the service time at the funeral home. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown, Illinois. The family requests casual attire. Memorials may be made to God's shelter of love. Decatur, Vogel, James Rex. James, Jim Rex Vogel, 63, passed away Sunday, January 31st, at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, February 8th, at Moore Funeral Home in Brazil, with burial to follow at Clear Run Cemetery in Bridgeton. The family will accept friends for visitation on Monday from noon until the time of service. Decatur, Singleton, Willie Frank. Willie Frank Singleton, 73, of Decatur, departed this life on Thursday, January 28th, surrounded by his family at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services celebrating his life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 6th, at House of Miracles Church on North Church Street, with visitation 1 hour before service. Burial at Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Salem, Andrews, John David. John David Andrews, 51, Salem, co-founder and president of U.S. Sonnet and Lightspeed Telecom, died Monday, February 1, 2016. Services 10:30 a.m. Friday, Salem Church of Christ, visitation 4 to 8, Thursday burial, Sandoval Cemetery. Arrangements by Rogers Atkins Funeral Home, Salem. Memorials go to the family. Stonington, Swigert, Lyle C. Lyle C. Swigert, 81, of Stonington, passed away at 3 p.m. Monday, February 1st, at St. John's Hospital in Springfield. A funeral mass will be 10 a.m. Saturday, February 6th, at Holy Trinity Catholic Church, Stonington. Father Don Wolford will officiate. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to service. Burial will take place at the Oak Hill Cemetery, Taylorville. Memorial donations may be made to Holy Trinity Church Hall remodel. McClure Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Memories of Lyle or condolence to the family may be sent to their website. And that is the end of the obituaries for Wednesday, February 3rd, as printed in the Decatur Herald and Review. Going on to lifestyles in that section, what you need to know about new dietary guidelines. This is by Andrea Weigel, Tribune News Service writer. Now that the smoke, debate, and confusion is cleared over the latest update to the federal dietary guidelines, here is what you need to know. Big picture focus. This year's update stresses a healthy eating pattern over the course of your life as opposed to focusing on individual nutrients or foods. It's not one food. It's a whole eating pattern, said Barry Poppin, a food science researcher at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and author of The World is Fat. Elisabetta Politi, nutrition director at the Duke Diet and Fitness Center, cheered the change. I'd like to commend them for that. The previous focus to limit certain foods or nutrients created confusion for many people trying to watch what they ate. I see this every day with many clients, Politi said. They feel guilty about eating eggs and butter. So what does a healthy eating pattern include? The usual suspects, a variety of fruits and vegetables, grains, especially whole grains, fat-free or low-fat dairy, a variety of proteins, seafood, lean meats, eggs, beans, peas, nuts, seeds, and soy products, and oils. How do you do this? The key is to take small steps, not efforts at large-scale change, said Nancy Faye Jensen, a registered dietitian and dean of the College of Health and Human Services at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. She suggests keeping track of what you eat for a few days and then looking at what healthier substitutions you can make. Mindfully identify places where you can swap out things that you like, Faye Jensen said. Bring a few ideas. Bring home a new-to-you fruit or vegetable every week, whether that's papaya or kohlrabi. Instead of white rice, make brown rice half the time. Instead of white bread, try some whole grain bread. Instead of whole milk, try 2%, then graduate later to 1% or skim. Expand your protein choices. Take a new fish or seafood. Go meatless one night a week. Make a big pot of beans or field peas once a month. What does a healthy eating pattern limit? Sugar, salt, and saturated fat. We should consume less than 10% of calories per day from added sugar. The same goes for saturated fat. Sodium should be limited to 2,300 milligrams a day. What's the math for sugar and saturated fat? Determining what is 10% of your daily calories depends on how many calories you eat in a day. For women, that's 1,600 to 2,000 calories. For men, it's 2,400 to 3,000. Therefore, 10% equals 160 to 300 calories. One 20-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola contains 240 calories from sugar. Three Oreo cookies contain about 54 calories from sugar. A McDonald's quarter pounder with cheese and large fries contains 140 calories of saturated fat. A Subway 12-inch meatball sub has 126 calories from saturated fat. It's easy to see how quickly it adds up. Let's break down the math for salt. A teaspoon of salt is equal to 2,300 milligrams. This is not only the salt you sprinkle in the food. That number also reflects the salt already in the processed foods we eat. In one day, you could reach that limit by lunchtime by eating 3 slices of bacon, 2 fried eggs, a 1-ounce snack-sized bag of Doritos, 2 slices of ham and 1 slice of American cheese, and 2 slices of white bread and a 12-ounce Diet Coke. What about coffee? The guideline scientific report cited research that shows the amount of caffeine in 3 to 5 cups of coffee can reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease in adults and may even protect against Parkinson's disease. And eggs? The guideline also seems to clear eggs as a culprit for artery clogging plaques that can cause heart disease. The guidelines removed the limit of 300 milligrams of dietary cholesterol a day. Experts caution this is not a green light to eat a lot more of cholesterol-laden foods. End of that article. Continuing with the foods theme here, Dear Dr. Roach, Omega. This is advice, Dr. Keith Roach for the Herald and Review. Omega-3 beneficial for heart. Dear Dr. Roach, are there any benefits of taking omega-3? Answer, yes, there are, but it's not clear just how big those benefits are. Although there's been some evidence that omega-3 fatty acids may be of benefit in slowing dementia, treating depression, and helping asthma, the consensus on these topics is that omega-3 supplements are unlikely to have a large benefit. However, most of the interest in omega-3 fatty acids is in cardiovascular health. There are many studies looking at the effect of fish-derived omega-3 fatty acids on a variety of heart outcomes. Certainly, they reduce triglycerides and slightly increase HDL levels. They slightly reduce blood pressure and reduce heart rate. Like other cholesterol-lowering agents, such as niacin and statins, they slightly increase blood sugar levels, though to a lesser extent than other agents. In large clinical trials looking at the outcomes that matter, such as heart attack and overall risk of dying, the study results are mixed. Earlier studies tend to show a large benefit, while more recent studies show a small benefit. However, no studies have suggested significant harm. In my view, after reviewing the available studies, is that omega-3 supplementation is likely to have a modest heart benefit. The greater the risk of heart disease for a given individual, the more benefit he or she is likely to get. The amount of omega-3 needed is small, about 250 milligrams per day of EPA plus DHA, the two different forms. They can be obtained by a supplement or by eating about 2 servings of fatty fish per week. Thank you. Next article on in section D here, lifestyles, matchsticks strike Iowa man's fancy. There's a picture of him looking at a pretty intricate carousel, actually, that he, looks like he's built with the matchsticks. Muscatine, Iowa. The steady hands of Jim Scott have created some pretty great things on very small scale. This crafty retiree has had many hobbies and experiences and a long history in Muscatine, with the latest being built of matchsticks. This is by Melissa Gallagher, Lee News Service. I do not count the matches, said Scott, 82, as he gently blew on the fan of a miniature windmill built of whittled matchsticks. Every working piece a real windmill needs to operate is reassembled in the tiniest form. Some designs have 150, some have 300 or more, I'd guess, he added. Scott retired from Grain Processing Corp. in 1998 after 34 years in research and development. He said his free time has allowed him to draw his own patterns and catch up on some projects he's always wanted to complete. A recent creation, a ship about 7 inches long and equally as tall, details every section of a boat from the tip of the mast to the bow of the stern. This is a model of a model, Scott said of the ship. I had saved an article from Science and Mechanics magazine from 1957, I believe it was. I thought, maybe when I get old I can make it. And I got old and finally made it. A tiny airplane with a moving propeller and wheels about half the circumference of a pencil eraser are a true testament of his talent for miniature detail. The wheels are a real challenge to get round. I glued 3 matchsticks together and drilled a hole, he said. I don't do perfect work, but it functions. Scott has always had a busy lifestyle, but it was the heartbreaking loss of his wife, Jacqueline, of 50 years that brought him to find new ways to occupy his time and mind. I have got to keep busy, Scott said with teary eyes when discussing the loss of Jacqueline 9 years ago. And busy is an understatement. Scott dabbles in nature photography and tumbles agates at home. The former dairy farmer lives in a home that once was a one-room schoolhouse. He is a gardener, a beekeeper, a charter member of the Iowa Native Plant Society, and belongs to a mushroom club. I also enjoy leather work and copper tooling, he added. It's not profitable, but enjoyable. The matchstick models are the latest addition to his hobbies, taking him a week to 4 weeks to complete. His hobby requires a little glue and a lot of creativity. For a steam engine, he used the shape of a soda can to glue matchsticks on for a rounded roof. A little engineering allows a steering wheel to move the axle of a tractor no more than 3 inches tall. He might be proudest of a carousel with horses and a unicorn that move up and down as it spins on the twist of its top. He's also partial to a mobile Ferris wheel that he copied from an advertisement he clipped from a newspaper. He puts in about 3 hours at a time before arthritis makes him take a break. Scott is currently working on a little hummingbird that has each matchstick placed just right to shape its meticulous wings. I have to find creative ways to hold them stable. Sometimes people think that because I'm older, I may not be able to do detail work, but I have a very steady hand, Scott said. End of the article. And the last article on in this first page, or second, whatever page of D, Social Security benefits help provide equal treatment for society. Throughout the month of February, we celebrate Black History Month. This is by Gerald Tilley for the Herald and Review. Created in 1926, this event coincides with the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln on February 12th and Frederick Douglass on February 14th. African American communities have celebrated these birthdays together since the late 19th century. Honoring our shared history and reflecting on the past is one way we unify as a nation. We remember that we are all Americans. We believe in freedom and democracy for all. Another shared belief is that we all deserve a comfortable retirement free of economic hardship. Social Security has retirement benefits and the tool to help you plan for your retirement and apply for benefits online. We also provide disability benefits to individuals with medical conditions that prevent them from working. If the disabled individual has dependent family members, they can also receive payments. If you or anyone you know is disabled, they may qualify for disability benefits. Studies show that a 20-year-old worker has a 1 in 4 chance of becoming disabled before reaching full retirement age. You can see if you meet our strict definition of disabled and also apply for disability benefits at www.socialsecurity.gov. Widows, widowers, and their dependent children may be eligible for Social Security survivors' benefits. Social Security helps by providing income for the families of workers who die. In fact, 98 of every 100 children who get benefits. In fact, 98 of every 100 children could get benefits if a working parent dies, and Social Security pays more benefits to children than any other federal program. You can learn more about Social Security survivors' benefits also at the www.socialsecurity.gov line. Honoring each other begins with fair and equal treatment. Social Security guarantees that. If you pay into the system, you will have the same benefits as everyone else. This Black History Month, we want to make sure our diverse nation is covered and that no one is left out of the benefits they deserve. So go visit their www.socialsecurity.gov to learn more. So there's some Social Security questions here at the end. That was prepared by Gerald Tilley, who's the Social Security District Manager here in Decatur. Question: I can't seem to find my Social Security card. Do I need to get a replacement? Answer: in most cases, knowing your Social Security number is enough. But if you do apply for and receive a replacement card, don't carry that card with you. Keep it with your other important papers. For more information about your Social Security card and number, and for information about how to apply for replacement, visit socialsecurity.gov. If you believe you're the victim of identity theft, read our publication Identity Theft and your Social Security number. Again, same website. I own a small business. How can I verify employees' Social Security numbers? Answer: employers can use our Social Security number verification service to verify the names and Social Security numbers of current and former employees for wage reporting purposes. So then you go to the website and go to /employer/. That is the end of the article on Social Security. Continuing with D section, books and literature. Author Strout blends truth into her fiction. This is by Nicole Broder, Tribune News Service writer. When Elizabeth Strout was in second grade, there was a boy, very poor, with no friends and dirt behind his ears. Our teacher said to him, "You're not so hard up, you can't afford a bar of soap," and he turned deep red, the author told me. That child has stayed with me. The title character of her slim new model, My Name is Lucy Barton, is an homage to that boy, to these very rural families who are outcasts because they're poor. Strout said, "Every town has one, and probably a lot more now." Strout's latest narrator grew up in remote and stark Illinois town where she lived in a cramped and cold garage beside her great uncle's house with her parents' mother, her parents' brother and sister. Lucy stayed warm by staying in class long after classes ended, doing homework and reading until the janitor nudged her out. "Lonely was the first flavor I tasted in my life, and it was always there," Lucy said, "hidden inside the crevices of my mouth, reminding me." Her studies allowed her to avoid the dysfunction at home, and it would propel her out, away, never to return. A full scholarship to a Chicago university, marriage to a well-to-do classmate, 2 daughters, a writing career, and a life in New York City. But when Lucy ends up in the hospital with an infection, her husband flies her mother out to keep her company. They connect the usual way, gossip about the town, people Lucy escaped long ago, but can't shake from her being. It's familiar ground for Stout, who made her mark with another mother-daughter novel, Army and Isabel, in 2000, and whose 2008 book, Olive Kitteridge, won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction and was made into an HBO miniseries starring Frances McDormand that won 4 Emmys. There's a lot of Lucy Barton in her, Strout said. She grew up in rural Maine, went to college, got a law degree, married, and lives in the big city as a writer. "Honestly and truly, every character I wrote, they are all me in some way," she said. "They have to be, because I'm the only person I know. That's the truth of it." As a child, Strout realized she would never see the world except through her own eyes. "I was so frustrated with that," she said, "and so I began to read. I remember thinking, oh, I have had that thought. Books have always made me realize, oh, this is what it's like to be another person. I write because I've always wanted to be another person, but I make it up from what I have observed closely about other people." Strout has made her mark with those close observations and putting to the page what people don't usually say in public. "I have always believed that everyone will bring their own story to whatever book they're reading," she said. "But this book particularly, I was aware that this was more porous than my others and that leaves more room for people to bring their own experience. I don't want to press anybody's face into things either," she said. "I just don't want to be that kind of writer. People can do that, and they do it beautifully. I'm more interested in the essence of people." Strout has been writing for decades before her first novel was published. "There was a time when she was working as a waitress and writing, and I never got a nibble, and I began to think to myself, oh my God, I'm going to be 58, and I'm going to be a cocktail waitress completely unpublished, and that's going to be pathetic." She went to law school and got a job as a legal aid lawyer. "I was doing what I wanted to do, but I was so bad at it," she said. "I remember standing in the backyard thinking, I can be a bad lawyer or a 58-year-old waitress who's trying writing and gave it everything, and that's going to be fine. If I'm going to die, I will die knowing I tried with my whole heart." End of that article about Lucy, Elizabeth Strout. Next article, Arts and Theater. Morgan is Back and Returning to Stand-Up by Fraser Moore, an AP writer. New York, a gruesome highway accident followed by months of pain and rehab. That's no laughing matter. Not unless you're a comedian, Tracy Morgan, who's mining this ordeal for laughs with his Picking Up the Pieces stand-up tour. After its current warm-up phase, the tour officially launches Friday at the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond, Indiana, and continues through May. Among other dates, he will perform 3 shows in New Jersey, including a New Brunswick theater about 20 miles from where the accident occurred. "I'm in a good place in my life," said Morgan during a recent phone conversation. "When I first got back on the stage, I had to work up my confidence, but I wasn't scared. I wasn't nervous. I was excited." It was June 7th, 2004, when a Walmart truck slammed into the limousine Morgan was riding. The crash killed a close friend and fellow comedian and left Morgan with broken bones and brain damage. He was in a coma for 2 weeks. "I was basically knocking on the door," he said, but added with undisguised gratitude, "I came back. That's the spirit moving me." That was plenty impressive, but still it held no promise that Morgan, who has long scored laughs in concert on 30 Rock and Saturday Night Live, would ever be able to perform again. On the Today Show last June, in his first public appearance since the accident, Morgan sat clutching a cane and with a tear streaking down his cheek acknowledged he wasn't 100% yet. "When I'm there, you'll know it," he said. "I'll get back making you laugh, I promise you." He made good on that promise 3 months later with a surprise appearance on the Emmy telecast. By then, he'd made good on a promise to himself to wed his fiancee Megan Woolover on his own terms, walking her down the aisle with no cane. Then in October, he returned triumphantly as guest host of Saturday Night Live, where he'd been a cast member from 66 to 03. "I felt so good getting back to SNL," he said. "It was like the first day I was there many years ago. That first time was crazy, but to have the opportunity to have the feeling all over again, wonderful, man." And I said, "I want to tour again." And that was the end of any doubts. He admits to grave doubts during his long convalescence in therapy. "I remember being visited by a good friend I'd known all my life. And I said, 'Why did God let this happen to me?' And with the meanest look, she said, 'Never question God.' I said, 'I'm sorry.' And she said, 'Okay, baby, that's all right.' Tough times don't last. Tough people do," Morgan sums up. "We're all here because we're tough." Morgan, 47, has made amusing use of a lifetime of tough challenges, including a harsh childhood and health issues that included a kidney transplant in 2010. So it's no surprise he's dressing his last wounds in humor. "The accident was a setback, but as you know, in my world, a setback's a setup," he said. "You can use things that happened in your life that weren't funny, tragedy turned inside out. If you don't laugh about it, you cry about it, and I'm tired of crying. But comedy doesn't just come from pain," Morgan adds. "It comes from joy, too. Chief among his joys are his wife and their 2.5-year-old daughter, who, as Morgan speaks, can be heard chiming in with, 'Mickey Mouse, Mickey Mouse,' as she addresses Mickey's image on her iPad. 'Now you see what's important and what's not,'" declares Morgan. "I've learned a lot, man. I learned about life, about the things I used to stress out about. Things we worry about on a day-to-day basis aren't important, not when it comes down to life and death. I talk about all that on stage. But I talk about things that are happening right now, too. I look back, but I look forward, too." One thing he's looking forward to is a pilot deal for a prospective series that he would star in, to be developed in partnership with Jordan Peele, Key and Peele. The new FX comedy would cast Morgan as a career criminal released from prison after 15 years, who finds himself flummoxed by the modern world he's reentering. It could begin production as soon as this summer, but Morgan said little beyond, "It's going to be incredible." His current focus is on his tour. "I'm tapped into something, man, that nobody else can talk about," he said of his near-death experience. "I went to the other side and came back bearing gifts, and I'm going to share all those gifts with my fans. I got a whole bag full of funny for you, a truckload of funny coming your way." End quote. End of article. We'll finish section two with the business section. Local, the money section, local. Busey details plans for downtown renovations. This is by Chris Lavardi of the H&R staff. Decatur, the block to the south of Central Park in Decatur, will be undergoing a major transformation later this year. Plans for an over $3.3 million project was detailed Tuesday to renovate the Busey Bank and First Check facilities between the park and East Main Street. Buildings along East Main Street will be torn down and replaced by parking and green space, while the interior and exterior of the buildings on South Park Street will be remodeled for First Check and a drive-through window added to the east side of the Busey branch at 130 South Water Street. "It's going to be visually pleasing," said John Waddick, Executive Vice President and Commercial Market President for Busey Bank in Decatur. "It will provide a whole different look to the intersection. For Busey, the ability to add the drive-through to its main building will be more convenient and efficient than having it in a separate part of the property as it is now," Waddick said. "First Tech has been headquartered in Decatur for more than 30 years," said Howard Mooney, First Tech President and CEO. "It became a subsidiary of First Busey Corporation in 2007 when the Champaign-based parent of Busey Bank merged with Main Street Bank and Trust. Prior to that, First Tech had partnered with First National Bank of Decatur. As the First Tech facility ages, upgrades to its offices have become unnecessary," Mooney said. "It's become outdated," Mooney said. "They're not really working for us anymore. We're going to be changing all that. We'll have a nice building. It will hopefully propel us for the next 30 years. The project will enable over 50 jobs to remain downtown, with the goal to finish remodeling by the end of the year," Waddick said. "It's the type of project Mary Julie Moore Wolf wanted to see after changes to the downtown streetscape were made in recent years, as having the company there can benefit the whole area. This is exactly what we want to see," Moore Wolf said. "We want to see jobs stay downtown." Other city and business leaders from organizations including the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce participated in a ceremony to announce the details of the project. Wadek said the project will be done in stages to attempt to minimize disruption to its customers and traffic around the area, particularly on a busy part of North Franklin Street. Some temporary impact on the surrounding streets might become necessary at the times when work is completed, she said. Well, work is completed. That is the end of Section 2 of the Decatur in Review E-Edition, as read by Debbie, on Wednesday, February 3rd, 2016, and I will talk to you again next week.